Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today my guest is author Sam Moffey. He is here to talk about his second novel, The Organ Grinder and the Monkey. Sam Moffey is a lifelong baseball fan of Youngstown, Ohio. When not writing or playing local political activist, he manages his bar, walks his dogs, and likes to drink a glass of red wine with his muse. Sam has three children, one son-in-law, one granddaughter, two dogs, and two cats. He has always been interested in writing and says it just took him 46 years to put down everything else and get started. It was a job made easier by being the victim of a hit-and-run driver and being laid up with six broken bones in his back for 2 years. The Organ Grinder and the Monkey is Sam's second novel, and he also is the author of Swap and the soon-to-be-released Nomad. You can find out more about Sam through his website, samsstories.com. So welcome to the program, Sam.
Oh, thank you for having me in that wonderful introduction, and I'd like to say hello to your listening audience.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm happy to have you here today. I'm just astounded hearing about this accident that you have. Is that really what kind of catapulted you into writing?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I've been dabbling and stuff, and I've been, kind of reached a block with, fighting, trying to be a political activist and things of that. It just, those things are starting to bore me. You can only manage your bar so much and run one and things of that nature. And your kids get older and they've grown up and a lot more free time. So it was time for a career change. I just didn't expect it to happen that it would almost kill me. That would get me to do that, and I guess that was I believe in good karma, bad karma, so that was good karma laid up. All I could really do was write and watch television.
Yeah. it sounds like it was meant to be that you were just meant to sit and start writing.
Right, that was it. I would have loved to have just sit. I had to lay on my back for about 3 months. That was terrible.
Wow.
I had to hold my, and I had to hold the, the legal pad, and I had terrible handwriting to begin with. With the pen up, just unflatting your back, pens would run out. I had to get, any sort of pen that would, deal with gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up doing pencils because the pens are just terrible. I kept waiting for the ink to just fall back on my face.
Gosh, that's old school. Most people are typing on a laptop these days.
Yeah, I didn't have that luxury. I had to wear this, your neck is in a brace, and it's got, it's almost like a scientific, antennas hold the neck in place.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can't even move. I couldn't even, just sitting still. If I moved, when I had to move, I had to move my whole body.
Oh, wow.
So just that. But gradually things got better, and I certainly could write down a lot of ideas that I wanted to put down onto, on the thought and create characters and plots and all that sort of stuff. So it had its solitude. Had total advantages to me to start my imagination journey.
Mm, mm-hmm. So now, is this a new career for you? Have you dropped the bar completely, or?
Not completely, because I'd probably starve to death. So I've got one. I got rid of one. I was lucky enough to get rid of one in the tough economic times. So I'm down to one that's easy to manage. Gives me a lot of free time to write, market, rewrite, edit, all that sort of stuff, do interviews, and all those things that are required if you really want to, sell yourself and find an audience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your writing background. When did it all start? Was this your major in college?
I was a minor in English. Way back when in college, I thought I was going to be a politician.
Oh.
I was in the political science, which was... still required a lot of writing, and one aspect, to do things. I really got involved in my community where I was living in. It's a very corrupt community, so it even made it more daring do to get involved and fight the corruption that's still ongoing today. It's terrible.
Mm.
To try to do something, make a difference. And so basically what I had learned in college, I worked on my student newspaper. We put out an underground newspaper. That was the most fun I ever had writing.
Mm-hmm.
Just really doing that. Not being very satirical and cynical and attacking, the nasty administration and only allowing us to have 10 keg parties and not 5 keg parties. How dare they? Or 15 keg parties. How dare they? Things like that. So we did stuff like that. But I created something. I always wrote well in paper, and I always did well on written essays and things of that nature. I read a lot. I still do. My biggest teacher would be I'm losing my imagination in reading. And I was born deaf in my right ear.
So I
couldn't participate in a lot of sports, growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Still, because obviously I'd either hurt myself or hurt somebody else. The whistle didn't blow.
Right.
But I read a lot.
Oh.
And I really, reading good books has really been the greatest classroom for me.
What kind? Just everything and anything?
Well, at first I was really into biography. When I was a kid, I just got lost in reading about, the heroes of yesterday, male and female,
Mm-hmm.
And nonfiction, a lot of stuff on the Civil War, a lot of historical things as a kid. As I got older and more educated and my mind opened up and meet other people who could turn you on to other things, I really got into fiction, which is what I write, and I really loved certain fiction writers, Vonnegut, Irving, Joseph Heller, and people of that nature, just read book after book after book that they read. And they were the best teachers for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So will all of your books be in fiction?
Yeah, I'm going to do I think at some point I'm going to do a nonfiction book. I dabbled with when I was going back to my accident, I was at this specialist who advised me not to get operated on. I did, and I did nothing but a year of therapy, and I'm glad it worked out because operations in your neck and back aren't really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, I found this old Life magazine story about these, there were three children who all got killed in a car crash in New York, and what happened, how their lives were all different. It was like a three-way car crash. And they all came from different avenues, and I just thought that might be an interesting what happened, why, what they were doing, one of those. That's the only thing I'd ever thought about doing nonfiction, but I don't even know if that will ever come to it.
It sounds like just from what I'm hearing you say that, this new book, The Organ Grinder and the Monkey, is very character-driven, but it sounds like this is actually a theme through a lot of what you read in general with the work that you do and your interests. You're very interested in people.
Absolutely. I always have. I've always been a people person. And, you get, especially in the bar business, I can't tell you the amount of stories I've heard over the years.
I'm sure.
And the amount of rich characters.
Yeah.
You get some really rich characters, who come in and that's always, they're a wealth of information. Names. Been very helpful with names. I've been able to grab names from, basically all the clientele I've had over the years, which is good. And, if worst case scenario, I always go back to the phone book to find names. But that gets too tedious. So then someone advised me, why don't you go through the obituary pages
mm-hmm.
and look for names. At least those names might live again in your writing. And I kind of like that.
Oh, interesting.
I kind of like that. So I said, hey, I could put these names together and these people have passed from us, but, the name will be in print somewhere. So that's what I do now to get the names. But I've got that. I'm well read. I'm a movie aficionado, so that helps me. I'm big on popular culture and trying to tweak. Popular culture nowadays definitely needs a tweak in the nose, and a poke in the eye and a kick in the turd.
It's getting a little flat.
Yeah, and I like that my characters do that. I like to put my characters in a position where they can comment on some of the things that just are dominating our society and really in popular culture and shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know, actually, that you said somewhere, I read somewhere, that you were hoping for readers of The Organ Grinder and The Monkey to really learn something about contemporary culture. So with this book, what were you hoping to pass on?
Well, I tried to pass, and thanks for asking that. That's a good question. And every author's dream to have a question asked like that. Book, so thank you. A couple of things. I tried to pass down. I'm a big believer in the Al-Anon form of recovery. My ex-wife was had an addiction, and I learned I didn't get better myself until I learned about Al-Anon, and that I was a codependent myself.
Mm-hmm.
And the philosophy of Al-Anon is a wonderful philosophy when you abide by it. And for anything, I think you don't even have to be an addict to live by the rules that it, you know, it places in order for you to live with the attic if you chose to do so. I mean, I'm divorced now, and I'm still glad that I have those teachings and philosophies that came into me because it helped me.
Great
and
tools.
I tried to make Al-Anon, and a lot of people aren't familiar with it. I mean, everyone's familiar with the alcoholic, the drug addict, the sex addict, the food addict, that side.
Mm-hmm.
And our society seems to focus on that. They don't focus on more of the recovery side and the other people. You know, they say one addict affects 10 people.
Wow.
Whatever the addiction is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I tried to bring the Al-Anon, I tried to make that a central focus of the book as compared to, in popular culture, it's all about, you know, therapy and psychiatrist and stuff, what I call psychobabble.
Mm.
And in the book, I tried to make, I made it this therapist, I think an antagonist. I wanted to come across as an antagonist. But she writes a popular book based upon, one of the characters. But the other character, Irving, Seymour, which she writes a book about, Irving, his wife develops into an alcoholism, and he comes into Al-Anon. And that was where I was able to push the Al-Anon philosophy of life to my readers as a better way and the better way to go.
Okay. And he really goes through a healing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he does. He goes through a lot. Yeah, the other thing is I tried to remind people that there used to be a thing called silent movies in society. And I tried to make that I did a lot of research. I had a lot of fun researching that.
Well, this is on your book cover, too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I tried to do that. That becomes a hobby for everybody. It's one of those common denominators that all the three characters have. You know, the movies and stuff. And but I went through the silence, and it was really interesting learning about that and all that sort of stuff, and trying to convey that to the audience that reads the book. Is that hey, were silent movies great? They were elaborate. They were elegant. They were better than today's movies. They told a story. You had to think. You had to do more than just have someone tell you the story. You had to really dive into it. And I was really happy to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I took a shot at reality television, which I just am the biggest enemy of.
Are you really? It's everywhere.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. I just can't. You know, what I did, and I had the third character, the actress, Constance, she goes out for all these plays that are made, and what happens is her producer takes bad television shows and turns them into complete craziness with the television shows. You know, he takes Gilligan's Island and tries to turn it into a drama, and does plays with movies and books and all sorts of things that just outlandish. It would never make it past any producer's wastebasket. But I made him be real popular, and the guy who produces it is making a fortune off just manipulating the movies and televisions of today.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a slap at the reality television.
Sounds like you're not very happy with some of the current things in our culture right now.
No, it's limited. It's like everything else in our life. It's becoming, except for books. You know, books are still out there. You can get any book you want.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's fiction, nonfiction, from, 200 years ago to now, and everyone's writing books, and there's all sorts of different books out there. Unfortunately, we are governed by
the publishing companies.
Yeah, the publishing companies and agents,
mm-hmm.
who are a very closed group of people,
yeah.
And they only want, I want the next Twilight. I want the next Harry Potter. I want the next, I want the next legal thriller, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at all the books out there that are constantly coming across the market, and the writers and the groups such as yours that give us the opportunity, there's so much out there. There is no monopoly in the writing, but there is a monopoly in the movies and television. There's a monopoly on how many cars dealers things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty soon there won't even be three car dealers the way car makers the way we're going.
Yeah, really.
I was reading. I got an email address from somebody who said that a lot of the publishing world was having serious problems.
Mm.
But because they don't get it, they're only going to publish the next celebrity's book, the next book about a diet, and the next book about whatever fad of the day is. And they can't. And they don't wonder. One day I went to Barnes and Noble, my local Barnes and Noble. I just wanted to see, how they place the books and where they put them from a pure marketing standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And just amazed when you walk to the celebrity diet book. You know, how many diets can there be out there?
I mean,
how many people, I mean, to me, it's mind-boggling that people have to go buy a book on how to diet.
It's almost like a guaranteed sell, writing a diet book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing.
It really is. And especially if your name is, you know, the Paris Hilton diet. Or, wow, everyone's going to want out and buy it. And, it's amazing to me.
Or
the next athlete who writes a book, you know, who doesn't write the book himself.
Right.
You know,
right.
Or, you know, but when, you know, you live in a society is terrible when a guy like Donald Rumsfeld, who's just, could write his, the advance for his book, I don't think anybody, it was $15 million.
Wow.
Okay, I'm thinking, how many people are even going to buy his book?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even if, you know, people who hate him aren't going to buy it, and he's hated more than he's liked.
Mm-hmm, right.
I mean, so no wonder the publishing world's, you know, crazy. I mean, I just said the other day that Laura Bush is shopping her biography, and, you know, she'll get a $50 million advance. But that's what they do. And then when the books don't sell of that many, you know, they can't justify. They wonder why people get their, you know, lose their jobs.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at how many books are actually published when you include self-published authors, small presses. It's over, you know, 200, 250,000 books a year. And our choices in bookstores are just so limited.
Right, exactly, because, yeah, that's the, you know, you said it, with just Barnes & Noble. I think, I can't even think of the other one, Barnes & Noble. I can't even think of Barnes & Noble's biggest competitor.
It really, Borders,
that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean,
how many towns even, and maybe the big cities like New York, Chicago, Houston, and that, maybe they in L.A., they have enough people living there to have support an independent bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't, you know, I know my books are lucky, you know, that, you know, Target has them, you know, and some other places I know, they've been carried in some of those places, but that was hard work trying to get them into those, the buyer to like your book.
It is. It's a lot of work for a small press author to get out there. I mean, you have to do a lot of your own marketing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's like just like we are doing right now and taking the opportunity. Some people don't. I've gone to a couple book signings, some readings, you know, and some conferences. I've been amazed at some of these writers who I've met who are so shy.
Mm.
I think that, you know, they want to write the book, somebody else market it for them. They don't even want to go to any of these things, and I don't think you can do that in today's world.
No, it's not possible. And that's one thing that I've seen through the years is that a lot of authors just don't realize how much work it actually is. It might be 10% of the work you're actually going to do is writing the book, and 90% is marketing and promotion.
Right, you're absolutely right. I mean, and I think a lot of people, you know, they, and that's why what we were talking about earlier, the big shots at the publishing houses, they only want to work with a safe product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they know that John Grisham will go out and sell his books, you know.
Yeah, guaranteed.
They know that all these other people will be. I mean, to tell you how funny it was, when I was right after I wrote Swap, and I was getting, then I started to look for, I figured, hey, I got a book published, this and that, got some reviews, won an award, I could, an agent would come knocking on my door, you know. And of course, none of that happened.
Mm.
My own agency, and which I found I can do my own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've been able to get some publishing deals and this and that on my own without an agent, which I think is the future.
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
I just think is the future. You know, I think the agents are so, you know, they're eating each other up, they're gobbling each other up and whatnot. But to prove a point, being a big Kurt Vonnegut fan, I took the first 20 pages of his novel, Breakfast of Champions, one of my favorite novels. All I did was change the title of the book and the main character's name. And I sent it out to 20 agencies,
mm-hmm.
20 agents, and it got rejected by all but one. All but one. A standard rejection, and what tells me, they don't even read.
Yeah.
They don't even read your synopsis. They don't read your query unless you're doing stuff. They're going to find you.
Oh, that's so funny.
They're going to find you if you're, and that's what I decided. So I had to do all my time, energy, not looking for an agent, not writing synopsis, not dealing with that, but active marketing.
But promoting. Wow.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Sam Moffey, author of The Organ Grinder and the Monkey. And you can find out more about Sam through his website, samstories.com. So you learned a lot with your first novel.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I learned that. And I really believe, and funny, I got an email from Kurt Vonnegut's son, Mark Vonnegut,
mm-hmm.
Who wrote a book himself, a best-selling book called Dealing with His Schizophrenia. And he wrote me this long thing about publishing, too, and how his dad had problems and all these people. You know, it's a whole different literary world for me when you're dealing with Mark Vonnegut and people like that. But, you know, but what he said was that the state of the publishing world is so... it's so closed-minded and what have you that if you're going to have to get up there and do it yourself, because in his mind, the future for publishing is going to be print on demand online.
Yeah. It's all going online.
It's all going to go online, whether it be Kindle book or you won't go to Barnes & Noble. They won't exist. They'll exist online.
They'll exist
online. But Amazon is going to be the big boy on the block, and they're even in the publishing business now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they'll just marketing, and you'll just go there, and you won't have to. There'll be no advances. It'll just be like, hey, you sold 50 books this week. Here's your check. You know.
Isn't it amazing how the technology we have can change an industry so dramatically like that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I really do. Now, I heard for my third book, Nomad, coming out. I wasn't aware. I was just in the editing process, and. I got this email from my person doing all the marketing, who's going to be doing all the marketing for, and they said, well, you have to go Kindle now because Oprah just mentioned on the show, like right before Thanksgiving, Kindle books is one of her favorite things.
Oh, yeah.
So all of a sudden, I had to sign up for that.
Yeah.
You know? That was that, you know, and she said that. That's how powerful she is.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she is so powerful. I mean, it's amazing, what she can do.
Yeah.
But that's what you're right, because of the technology, so you'll see that, I think. Although I still have I know some people have to read online. You know, they'll buy the book and they'll read it for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's going to catch on for a while. But the marketing and buying and downloading, you know, and all that will be in the book form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you're going to see that's the way to go. The Kindle, I can't see people. I'm 48.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I couldn't sit in front of a computer and read a book.
No, me neither.
Okay,
mm-mm.
But my son, 22, who's in Iraq right now, says a lot of the guys have bought books online.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so they're out there in Iraq, and they're, because they don't have that much, they don't have that much, that's what I'm looking for, space.
Space,
you
mm-hmm.
know, they got a foot locker, and that's it,
yeah.
You know, and so a lot of them have been buying the books online and downloading with the laptops being cheaper and this and that.
Yeah.
So I can see that. I can see young people for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
people who travel a lot, like I know a lot of people, I don't travel that much, but people on planes are buying them too,
mm-hmm.
It's there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it definitely is the future, though.
There is a market. There is a market for it. But I imagine, obviously, the writing aspect is still your most favorite part of all of this.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So when did The Organ Grinder and the Monkey, when did you start writing this story?
I wrote that in, it took me the whole 2007, basically almost the entire calendar year.
Now, were you laid up at that time?
Yes.
Okay. So tell us where the original idea for this story came from in these three characters.
You're going to really laugh now.
Okay.
Which is what I like to do. I like to make people laugh. My son, I live in Youngstown, Ohio, which is known for three things: public corruption, the mafia, and good high school football. Okay?
Are you serious?
That's what went on.
Okay.
True story, all right? My two sons play football. And really good, they were good football players in high school. I know and we went to Steubenville, Ohio to play a football game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Steubenville, Ohio is down the street. It used to be a great boom town, and it's in the Rust Belt. Anyway, we were driving around looking for a place to park, at that time my wife, now my ex-wife, and we came across this mule, and it was a Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, this huge mule. And so, who would paint a mule of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis in Steubenville, Ohio.
Right.
Okay, and it was, and it showed him like they were in a car waving to a crowd. Which, and I'm thinking, oh, they got to be in. They made me even think more that, what was it, they were in New York City and they were at a ticker tape parade or something. You know, it was one of those type of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I came back and did some research and found out Dean Martin was from Steubenville. I never knew that.
Oh, wow.
And being a big movie fan, it really made me mad that I did not know that. And so started to do all this research, and that's where the book. That's how the book started.
Wow.
That's where it came from.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
and what about... And these three characters, Seymour, Irving, and Constance, where did they come from?
Seymour comes from the Steubenville, so I kind of, you know, and I played the background of the Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, so that was the reason I wrote the book, you know, I got the whole idea, like
yeah.
a light bubbling off of my head.
Okay.
So, you know, his father was he's a meek guy, you know, his father is a Dean Martin aficionado, knows everything about him, and his parents are divorced, and he just comes out of due to a trauma that happens to him because of his father. He ends up wanting to be a veterinarian to help people. That's what he wants to help animals because he can't deal with people.
Mm.
And that's where he ends up. And he ends up in New York because he breaks a animal part selling ring in Steubenville by pure dumb luck. And a woman, a benefactor in New York who's big on animal rights, sees that story about him and hires him to be her personal dog walker.
Oh.
While he goes and puts him to veterinarian school. That's how he ends up in New York.
Mm-hmm.
His personality starts to slowly and surely unravel. He becomes if the cover's black and white, you know,
mm-hmm.
a lot of that, he is a very black and white character due to that. He slowly but surely deteriorates to what he turns into.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Irving was a lot of fun to write about. He's half Jewish and half Scottish. He becomes a New York City police officer. That's what his goal in life is to be. And he's from Brookline, Massachusetts, and he ends up wanting to be a New York City police officer to help those in need on the streets. That's what happens to him. And Constance is from my hometown, Youngstown, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and she goes to New York City to become a famous actress. And basically, she finds in Youngstown, she is the most beautiful girl, the most gifted girl, best actress, a singer, dancer, you know, all that. She wants to be a Rockette. That's her goal in life. Is to be a Rockette, and when she goes there, she finds out so do another million girls.
Yeah.
And she finds out she's one of 100 million in New York City trying to make it as a actor, actress, whatnot. And so she's reduced to taking really bad parts in movies. Bad parts in plays.
Mm-hmm.
Off Broadway. and to make ends meet, she starts to dance in a high class strip club.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, to do that, and that's how she ends up, and that's how they all end up.
So you've got Youngstown, Ohio, and New York, two completely different places.
Yes.
So it's interesting that they're almost like characters in themselves.
Excuse me?
They're almost like additional characters in this story.
Oh, absolutely. I made Steubenville. I think I did a good job with that, and I went down there for a weekend. It felt like I was there for months. There was just nothing going on, but it was exciting and it was depressing. I did find out more about those murals from the time Steubenville around. It has people who were encouraged by the city fathers and mothers to put murals on their buildings.
Mm.
And some really unique murals.
Wow.
Not many people are going to, you're not going to come from Texas to go to Steubenville to go see the murals. But it was a unique little thing. But
mm-hmm.
it's a whole history of, you know, I guess it's because I'm from this area and I am my muse tells me, I am a captive of my zip code. I think we all are captives of our zip code.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know more about the Rust Belt. You know, it's an area that just has not shown any progression and whatnot since, you know, was first founded. I mean, it's still, the people in where I live still wake up, they still go to bed at night thinking when they wake up in the morning they're going to, the steel mills are going to open.
Oh, wow.
You know, the things of that nature.
Time stood still.
Yeah, time stood still. Yeah, time stood still for a lot of people, and
yeah.
And that hurts us. But you know, New York City's gets. And how can you not put me? I mean, I had to write about New York City sometime. It's such a, it's New York City, the capital of the world.
Of course. Have you been there?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
I go there a lot. It's it's always a new adventure, and that's always fun. My muse's stepdaughter, my muse's daughter lives there. Excuse me. Son-in-law.
Oh, okay.
So we got to go to the Upper East Side. And my mom She's 82 and still kicking, lives on the island with my stepfather.
Mm.
So it's always a nice weekend jaunt to go up to New York City.
Oh, that's great.
Because I got a free place to stay, so that means I have more money to spend on the other things there.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, that's an expensive place to go if you have to pay for your accommodation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, it's not, now with gas down to $1.50 a gallon, it's worth the ride. It's a six-hour ride.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
mm-hmm.
a lot of fun. And when I drive, I can do a lot of, I always have a notepad by me, and I can jot down a lot of things. I'm amazed at how much stuff pops in my mind when I'm just focusing on driving that I can use for a character here, a setting here, a plot there.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm jealous of truck drivers.
So much time.
Think of all the solitude that they have that they can do. Think about writing.
Yeah.
While they're traveling, but I'm sure they're thinking about other things.
Other things. So you're in the middle of writing Nomad at this point?
No, it's done.
It's done. Oh.
I'm very happy to say tomorrow my editor is that we go to the final final corrections, and then we go to printing in January.
Okay, so you're pumping out a book a year here.
I'm trying to. Well, believe it or not, I have a fourth one already.
Really?
Yeah, that will be out in the spring. It's called The Book of Eli.
The Book of Eli.
Yeah, it's a novella, really. But I just wanted to write something. While my son was getting ready to go to Iraq, I came up with the ideas of, we thought he'd have any deep conversations about, what you hate to do with anybody about death.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to think, we started asking those old questions that has always dogged mankind forever. What's heaven and hell like?
Mm.
And so I wrote a fantasy-type novel about my idea of what heaven's like. And I think it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's a nice little novella, and I think it's going to... And that I got a nice little publisher out of Minneapolis, Mill City Press, doing that.
Uh-huh.
And they're really fun to work with.
Great. Yeah. Is that the same publisher for Nomad?
No, I'm going... Nomad is... I did the right thing. I'm going with the Amazon Book Surge thing because of the marketing.
Yeah.
Their marketing has just been absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, they're good. And so what is Nomad? What's this story about?
Nomad is about this gentleman. His name is Aaron Abrams. He's the main character. Comes home, catches his wife and his best friend having relations.
Mm-hmm.
And his best friend happens to be his older brother.
Oh.
So he gets into his car, and he's a writer. He just nailed his first big. He decided to stop being a fiction writer to write a nonfiction book. Gets a huge contract from it. And he just jumps in his car with his golden retriever and starts a journey of self-discovery and what have you as he goes around doing interviews for his book and takes him from the Delaware Water Gap in Pennsylvania to New York City to Niagara Falls, Boston, Gettysburg Battlefield, Roswell, New Mexico.
Mm, big road trip.
And Custer and in Custer, North Dakota at the Crazy Horse Monument.
Oh, wow.
And that's that. It's a comedy. It's my best work.
Oh, that's great.
I think it's my best work. Flop was my first novel, but it's the first novel.
Yeah.
The Organ Grinder, I think I got two. Most of my reviewers who have said, everyone has said they like it, this, that, and I do too. But I really wanted to, I got into detail.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to prove, I was like a point, trying to prove a point on everything, and I think I had a little bit too much detail on it.
Mm.
But this one came out perfect, I'm glad to say.
Oh, wonderful. Now, I have heard that somewhere that everyone who knows you thinks that your writing is very autobiographical. So are you putting a lot of your own life into your books? What is going on here?
A lot of people say that. I would not. My first joke when people say that to me, I would say, I don't write autobiographical fiction. What are you, crazy?
Yeah.
And I always say that. But to be 100% honest, there is some autobiographical in my writing and all my books. And I think that.
Are you going to leave us to guess?
Huh?
Are you going to leave us to guess what it is?
I'm going to leave it to guess. That way it's more fun.
Okay.
But I mean, I'll tell you how bad it was. It's always funny. I'm slop. I went to Wittenberg University, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's in Springfield, Ohio, and I always try to... I probably have a dozen to 18 same old settings and whatnot, and it's a common theme to my novels. Wittenberg University will pop up and whatnot because, it was there. I can't write about Harvard. I didn't go there.
Mm-hmm.
So and make it stick and make it sound reasonable and make, for the audience to like it. Well, anyway, I made this in swap. I wrote that Wittenberg University was in charge of Viagra studies, for that, okay? So my mother was reading the book and called me up. She goes, I didn't know Whitmore University was in, you know, and I said, she goes, did you participate in that? Jeez, but, you know, that's when I knew that, hey, the story's sinking if my mother really, she really thought that.
Yes.
But so I like, so I do use stuff like that and let people guess, is that autobiographical? I have a character in Swap who's a bar regular, and I can't tell you how many people thought it was them.
Oh, okay.
And,
mm-hmm.
and all it was a cornucopia of people that I've met over my life, you know, as customers and whatnot. And, you know, I'm one of those believers that all fiction is truth. Somewhere in our history, you know, mankind, things that I've written about that are totally made up by me and others has happened.
Yeah, nothing new.
I really believe that. So yeah. I guess all fiction is autobiographical.
That's great.
From that standpoint.
That's great. Sam, it's been so great talking with you today. Our time is winding up here. I just wanted to make sure we got your website in again. It's samstories.com.
Yeah, that's two S's.
Two S's, yes, yeah, Sam Stories. And so all of your books can be purchased through your website?
Yes, they can, or you can go to Amazon.com, or you can go to BarnesandNoble.com.
Okay, wonderful. You're everywhere. And then purchase through or order through local booksellers, I'm sure.
Right.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, Sam, thank you so much. And I know we're going to speak again. I just wish you all the best with The Organ Grinder and The Monkey. It's really a great, great novel.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. And it's nice to be able to get away from the computer in the business of character building and creating and talk to somebody about all sorts of things that have to do with your writing. So
yeah.
I really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, you bet. It's been fun, and I know our listeners are really going to enjoy our time together here today. So we'll have you back.
Thank you. I hope to be.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, listeners, that's been Sam Moffey, and his latest book, The Organ Grinder and the Monkey, is on shelves now. As mentioned, you can purchase it through online booksellers as well as through Sam's website, samstories.com, that's with two S's, as well it can be ordered through your local bookstores. So I want to thank you once again for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. Until next time.